You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Cody Aker, Boys Basketball Coach at Gladstone High School. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Just actually got off the couch watching the first Space Jam with my son as the new one comes out tomorrow.
Wow. I mean, that's a great year. Back to back. You're going to go back to back Space Jam. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was the first time seeing the original Space Jam. And he has some older friends. One of my assistant coaches has two older sons, and so they were hyping it up, and so he wanted to know what it was all about. So we had a chance to watch some of it tonight.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm curious your son's perspective after watching the new one tomorrow. I think it's going to be on social media, it's going to be a blaze. You'll have to offer your son's input as well.
He was confused because his friends were like, well, talking about LeBron James. And he keeps saying, well, is LeBron James in this one we're watching? I go, no, that's Michael Jordan. And so he's got no context on who is in the first one in comparison to who's going to be in this new one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'll feel like two different movies probably to him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us today, Coach. We appreciate it. I want to start by giving you a chance to kind of introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell us a little bit about your basketball journey and how you ended up as the head boys coach at Gladstone High School.
Hey, I appreciate it, Derek. So my basketball journey kind of started right as I was a newborn baby. Both my parents played college basketball. Both my parents coached high school athletics throughout their career. And so sports in general, and especially basketball, have been a part of my life. Played high school basketball, and played for my dad, Scott Aker, who's been interviewed on this series prior at Wilson High School. And then from there, played college basketball at Concordia. And as soon as I graduated, I then jumped at the opportunity to teach and coach at Sandy High School. I was out there for 6 years as a JV coach, as well as teaching multiple subjects from PE to computer applications to science, which is what my major was in. And then finally, in my last couple of years at Sandy, I was actually able to teach full time as a science teacher, which was awesome because I went to school for that. And then from there, my last couple of years that I was at Sandy High School, learned a lot from Jason Mackey, who is no longer at Sandy. He's actually at Sentinel High School in Missoula, Montana. But he kind of poked and prodded and said, hey, you need to start looking at some jobs if this is what you want to do. And so I learned a lot from him in my 6 years that I was out there, and jumped at the chance to become a head coach at Gladstone High School. Just finished up my 7th year there. It's been quite the journey to get to the point where I am now, from, growing up as a coach's kid, to playing high school basketball for my dad, to playing college basketball, to then jumping into the coaching world. Been many, many perspectives that I've been able to kind of identify and see and lead me my current quest of kind of becoming a better coach as best I can.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about this last season before we jump into some other stuff. Just a completely strange season in so many regards. I'm curious as to, as you reflect on the past season, what are some key takeaways that you take from this past COVID year?
One thing that I think most of us in our profession know is that kids are resilient. As much as all the tough times that they've had, and they've been incredibly tough for many people, because kids are young and because they have a fresh perspective. I think the biggest takeaway I took from them was their resiliency. For many of us, we didn't know if we were going to have a season until, you know, 2 or 3 weeks prior to our first practice. And, all the kids that I had access to were always hopeful, and that we were going to have a season, that we were going to play, that they were going to get that opportunity. So, resiliency is the first one to go along with. I think the more and more we look at it, the more and more we need to make sure kids have fun. Because things aren't granted. As we all witnessed at the end of, the 2020 season, is that, the state tournament started at a few classifications and didn't start at ours at the 4A level, and it was completely taken away. And so there was no closure. And so I think, the ability to make sure kids are having fun, knowing that for many, this is going to be their end-all, be-all when it comes to their basketball career.
Yeah. We all had to make, as coaches, some modifications or even adaptations to what we did, right? With you're playing three games a week, you only practice 2 days, maybe 3 days. We played so many games in a short amount of time. Was there anything that you did, anything you modified or adapted that you thought worked really well for you that maybe you're going to use as you move forward into a regular season coming up in the 21-22 season?
Yeah, I feel really fortunate in that the group that I had this year had 6 returners from our team last year. And one of them got hurt. One of them was no longer with us. We had 4 returners in the end. But the reality of it is that I feel very fortunate that our midweek practices or our, we play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so either our Wednesday or our Friday practices, we went really short. I mean, we went for about 1 hour and 15 minutes. And I think the fact that we had so many returners, we didn't have to teach very much. We just had to tweak some things, which was really nice. I don't know if I'll be able to do that going forward. In that I'll have 1 returning starter, and 1 other kid that actually played. And so, there's going to be lots of shoes to be filled. And so there's going to be lots of teaching early on. But I still think, with everything that goes on in our kids' lives, from being successful in the classroom to the fact that a lot of them are working now, outside of the school day, that, 2 hours in a gym can be fun. It can be enjoyable, but it can be a grind, I think, as you get through the season. And I think especially next year, in that instead of going from a 6-week season that we're going to have 14 or 15 weeks, kids are going to be kind of caught off guard. And I think if we can go short some days during the week, I think it's going to pay dividends in the end. So I think that was one thing that we'll take forward in the next year that we modified. I think the other thing that we did, because we had so few practices, is that we did a lot of live ball stuff in practices this year. Got up and down and didn't really, break down things all that often. When we needed to, we did, but we saw the benefits in them getting up and down because of how quick the learning curve or how quick the conditioning needed to be able to play a 32-minute basketball game.
Right. You talked about it a little bit earlier, growing up as a coach's kid, getting to play for your dad. I'm curious how that experience you think has maybe shaped your coaching career, if there was anything maybe from learning from a young age or things that was instilled in you as a result of a coach's kid that has been an impact to you and hopefully on your players.
Yeah. I was in my dad's locker room from about the age of 5 or 6 when I was in kindergarten. I was my dad's ball boy. for the first time. And, I go to practices, because at the same time that my dad was coaching hoops, my mom was as well. And so it was a lot of times where one parent would pick us up from another parent's practice and take it to their own. And so we lived in the gym, and that's what we were doing. And so, the gym, and I always tell guys that your gym should be a sanctuary. You can get rid of all the other outside noises, whether it's a girlfriend or a significant other, whether it's, a bad test grade, whether it's mom and dad, whatever it may be. As soon as you step into the gym should be a safe place. It should be your sanctuary. And so that was one of the big things that I harp on, and I continue to kind of preach and tell kids from day one, is that as soon as you get here, enjoy hoops. You have the other 22 hours of the day to worry about things. Don't worry about things here. Let this be a safe place. I think on top of that, I had to develop some toughness being a coach's kid. And I'm sure other people that have been in the same boat understand that, in that you got to be even better than you think you should be, so that people aren't questioning, well, you're only playing because your dad's the coach. For me, it was a little rough going into my freshman year, because I didn't play, AAU hoops or, club ball with anybody from Wilson High School. And so I walked in as a freshman, only knowing a handful of people. And so making that freshman team was tough, in that I was a new kid on the street and nobody knew who I was. And so there were a lot of questions early on. But the toughness piece kind of, builds throughout. And that's another thing that I tried to instill in our kids, is that, every break we yell win, and we don't say gladiators. We don't say team. We say win. And it stands for what's important now, in that, forget and flush whatever may have happened in previous possession. Be tough, be focused, focus on what is now the important piece within the game. So those are kind of two big things of, it's a safe place and you got to be tough. The basketball IQ stuff, that was, spending hours upon hours on our living room floor watching my dad do stats. Nowadays a lot of us have Huddle, and we send our stats in, and this year was my first year I ever did that and did the Huddle assist. And I didn't particularly like it all that well, because mistakes were made, and I found myself going back in and editing their tags. Mm-hmm. But I get the time saving piece, but, it's nice to go back in and really pick and choose what you want to focus on. The countless hours on the living room floor watching my dad fast forward, rewind, pause, and go through stuff was invaluable. I don't think you could put a price tag on it.
Yeah. I'm curious, you got to be coached by your dad, and maybe one day you'll get to coach your son. How did your experience as being the son, how do you think that will shape your experience if you do get to coach your son one day?
Yeah. I know it, falls both ways in people's experiences. But I absolutely loved playing for my dad in high school. Part of it was, we didn't talk hoops 24/7 when I was in high school. We would talk hoops on the car ride to school. We'd talk hoops, coming home from school or from practice or from a game. But outside of that, there wasn't a ton of pressure that he put on either myself or my brother. Both Gage and I had the opportunity to play for our dad, and, both of us really felt like, it was a great opportunity. It really felt like we could be ourselves. We didn't have to try to be someone he was trying to mold us into. He always likes to tell the story that, we never, were made to go out in the driveway and shoot or go up to school and do workouts. we had to ask him to do it. You know, he never made us do anything we didn't want to do. And he coached us in other sports too. You know, he was our little league baseball coach and Babe Ruth. I mean, he did a lot of things coaching wise for us that wasn't just in the basketball realm. And so that's why I think it made it such an enjoyable experience that we saw him in different lights. And I think that's something that I would love to do. I would love to have the chance to coach my son. I mean, he's only five, and so there's several years away from that. He may change his mind, but you know, he's kind of on the same path that I was on, and that, you know, outside of this year, you know, hoping next year he wants to be at practices and wants to be on the bench and be a part of the guys, and you know, all of our players, you know. You know, our kid's name, and you know, they say hi to him all the time, and kind of a family atmosphere. And I think that's something that's really important, is that it's inclusive. And so, I hope I get the opportunity. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, if not in basketball, another sport, right? I mean, he's got to be playing little league soccer now, coach. You get him. You'll get him in something.
We'll get him in something, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. His big thing right now is swim lessons. He, you know, it's really neat to see how he has, in a week is all he's had five swim lessons, and in a week's time, his confidence of getting in the water. I mean, it's pretty impressive to see the change in that. And I think as coaches, we all love to see the confidence grow in kids, and to see that, you know, kind of switch be thrown. Like, hey, I can do this. And it was neat watching him the other day.
Yeah, that's awesome. Coach, I want to talk about, you know, in the last couple of years, you also have doubled up, not only as basketball coach, but as athletic director at Gladstone. I'm curious, how has becoming athletic director maybe changed how you approach coaching the basketball program?
I'll be honest, it's been tough. And I think all ADs that are also a head coach, you know, will say that and have that same statement, is that it's really tough. You know, I knew that going in, that it was going to be hard. I mean, I lived it, as, you know, my dad was the AD at Franklin and at Wilson while he was the head coach, for Hoops. And so I knew what the expectations were going to be. You know, one thing that my dad and I always talk about is that, you know, come 3 or 3:30 when the school day's over and you're in hoop season, you're no longer the AD, and you got to make sure you communicate that, because, you have to be able to, you know, give 110% focus on your guys that are in your program. You know, in year one, that was tough. In that, you know, I would have coaches that would come up in the middle of practice asking a question. And I'd be like, well, hey, I'm in the middle of practice. I'll get to you when I'm done. And, you know, some of them didn't like that. And so I had to make sure I had clear lines of communication that, hey, when I'm in practice or, you know, after school and I'm getting ready for a game, I'm not the AD. Like, I'm the head boys coach right now. And, you know, push comes to shove and there's an emergency and the decision needs to be made, obviously, yeah, I'll put my AD hat on. That was one thing, is trying to differentiate that time. The second thing that I think has helped me is, and I think some of our guys will argue this and be upset with this one, is that I had to be tougher on our guys in, you know, what our policies and our rules are. And, you know, lots of times, you know, kids will kind of groan and, you know, kind of have that puzzled look on their face of why. And I go, look who your head coach is. Your head coach is also the athletic director, the one that is setting the tone and, you know, setting the policies for every other student athlete in this school. And so, I think it's helped in that it's kind of firmed up some of those gray areas that we all kind of have in all of our athletic programs, and that, hey, this is a line, this is where we have to stand, and this is what we need to do. I think the third thing probably also is that it's given me more of a a global perspective. Being able to go to cross country meets, being able to go to all of our baseball and softball games this year, going to soccer, football, you name it, every sport that we have, being able to go and see the kids and interact with the kids, at the same time, see parents, in different lights that you're not aware of. And giving me that global perspective, I think, has been beneficial so that when it comes to hoops, knowing that hoops may not be a kid's number one sport, to know that there might be a parent that's having an issue at home, or families having issues at home, to who their friend group might be, because a lot of times we see them in our classrooms, we see them in the hallways, or we see them in practice or games, but we don't really see them in their friend groups all that often. And so, seeing who their other friends are in that global perspective has been really nice as well.
Yeah, you talked about parents, so I want to touch on that a little bit as well. Both as AD and head coach, something that we as coaches deal with on a yearly, weekly, and sometimes daily basis, right? What are some things that you do with parents in your program that you feel like has helped you maybe create better relationships and make them feel like a part of your program?
Yeah, I think, the biggest thing, I think a lot of us do it, is you got to have that start of the year parent meeting, where you have a face-to-face. We usually do it in one of our classrooms, try to do it later in the evening so that, parents that are working are able to get there. You want to be able to introduce yourself, introduce your staff, put names to faces so that parents know specifically, okay, if my son's a freshman, he's on the freshman team, who's his coach? And so, putting ourselves out there in front during the parent meeting, I think, is really key, so that parents know who they need to communicate with. This year, specifically has been, almost over communication. I was sending, emails out to our entire parent list almost daily, whether it was updating practice schedules, updating games, departure times for buses, that over communication. If you put everything out there ahead of time, then people can't come back and question this, that, and the other, because they can say they didn't know. But the reality is, if you over-communicate, all that information is out there. And a line that I like to use in our parent meeting as well is, you're not going to find somebody more competitive than myself. Not to say that high school basketball games are all about winning and losing, but the varsity level, you got to win. You have to keep your job and to make your program be successful and have kids buy in. Now there are other, avenues and other things that you do to make sure kids are successful outside of just wins. But as coaches, we're not out there just to hang out and have a good time. We're competitive in our own right, and we're competitive in our own ways, and we want to put the best product out on the floor that's going to help us be successful. And parents kind of look at you, look at me when I say that, and they kind of have this look on their face, and as I go and explain it, they go, okay, he's going to get kids in the game. He's going to get kids an opportunity to play, but at the same time, we want to be successful. So I'm not going to put somebody out on the floor that's going to, hurt us or hurt the team or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And if they have a problem with it, they can talk to the AD, right, Coach?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I'll put that hat on, and we can go down the list of things that need to happen. I guess that kind of leads into kind of the other part of the question as the AD. I sent many emails where, okay, here's the list of things that you need to do before we have a full on parent meeting. You need to make sure you talk to your kid. If your kid has an explanation that you don't like, okay, reach out to the coaches. If the coaches don't have an explanation that you like, okay, the next step then is have a sit-down meeting. If there's nothing there, if you want me to be there to help moderate, then we can do that. And I think that's the hard part nowadays is, you know, it used to be where you had to call, you know, the main office, or, you know, if you were calling the district office, you had to, you know, had to talk to somebody and jump through some hoops before you got to the principal or you got to the superintendent. Nowadays, people jump ship and they go straight to the top and they don't follow these protocols. And so reining people in to know, hey, we don't want you to involve people that have no idea what's going on with the situation. If we can't resolve it, we have these steps that we can go to. And if eventually it doesn't pan out the way you want to, then we can get the top dogs involved.
Right. Yeah, it's becoming more and more of an issue, I think, like you're saying, Coach. It's unfortunate, but hopefully clearly communicating that early will help get us back on track with the process.
Yeah, no, I think it's 5 weeks. You know, 5 weeks when fall sports have the first official practice. Yeah, as ADs, I hope we're all sending the same tune to our head coaches of you guys who over-communicate, because for some of these kids, it's been 2 years. You know, they haven't been apart because they didn't play this past year or whatever it may be. And so just because they're a junior or senior doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make a team or play on varsity. And so those communication lines are going to have to be real clear.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return with more from Coach Aker right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Coach Cody Aker. My next question, Coach, if I were to come visit, watch a practice, what would I see? What would I hear? What would I feel? What would that practice look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. one thing that we have done, and I know other people do it, and you know, it's been something that has kind of transcended all levels of hoops, you know, from professional down to high school. Is our warm up that we do every single day. We call it our dynamic warm up, and that it's not the original static stretching. You know, it's a lot of getting the body moving. And then we spend about, 5 to 10 minutes doing that. And then we spend another 5 to 10 minutes with foam rollers. And, we have a whole routine that we use foam rollers with. And, knock on wood, in my 7 years, we've been fairly healthy. And we've had some broken bones. We've had some, we haven't had any soft tissue structure damage stuff. And I think that's an attribute to us doing this warm up. A former assistant coach, I got to give a lot of credit to him. He's currently one of the strength and conditioning coaches down at Stanford. I stole him from Mackey at Sandy and brought him with me to Gladstone, and, he implemented all this stuff, and we have continued to ride this wave, and, it's been incredibly beneficial to our kids. I mean, we give every kid a foam roller for the season. And so it's not just you have it during practice, you get to take it home. And we really preach on stretching and, roll out on your bedroom floor if you're feeling sore. And I think that's been something that's been huge for us. After that, we then do, probably 15 minutes or so of skill work, whether it's team wide, or if it's, individual by position. And then, we shoot a lot of free throws. I don't know if it's helped us at all, we've gone on the roller coaster of the percentages, where we've had years we've shot a tremendous percentage, and other years, you know, we're barely 60%. So I guess I learned that from my dad, is that you just shoot a ton of free throws and hopefully it works out. But you know, on top of it, then we do a lot of live ball stuff. And you know, whether it's in the half court or if it's full court, we like to do a lot of transition stuff where you have a team that's going to be on defense, you know, lined up at the free throw line, the team that's going to be on offense lined up on the baseline, and you throw it to somebody and it's, you know, live from there. So, you know, both teams have to make decisions, whether it's, you know, make a great pass up the floor, or, you know, stop dribbling and move the ball, or defensively stopping the ball, you know, don't let the ball get in the paint, you know, stopping early. Those are things that we try to dictate in kind of those live ball situations. You know, another thing energy wise, is that we play really loud music during practices. I think a lot of other programs that might be using our school after school, like Driver's Ed or, you know, any sort of after school program, get tired of us. But, we like to play loud music, and fortunately I have a really loud voice, and I can yell and scream over the top of it. And it's just something that keeps the rhythm going, I think. And you know, we've kind of done that since day one. You know, eventually when we get down to teaching stuff, we turn the music off. But, you know, all of our warm-up, all of our skill stuff, shooting, free throws, it's loud music so that, you know, it's rhythm. Kids are focusing on just hoop things. Part of the other reason we do it, too, is that they're not worrying about those other outside, you know, influences that potentially could distract them and take their mind away.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. What are some maybe, I would call them acreisms, right? Or what I call my own doomenisms. You know, like if I were to watch you or listen to you in practice, like what are some like key things that you feel like you say over and over and over again that, if kids maybe had to do a skit about you, like what would be some phrases maybe that they would come up with to maybe to make fun of you because you say them so much?
I think one of them would be turn them. You know, in our full court presses and different pressures that we do, I think one thing would be the fact that I'm yelling turn them. You know, so you know, get the offensive guy to change directions or turn their back, so that then a trap or double team can come. I think another one is probably get on the floor. And we do some defensive drills where, you know, the ball is loose and you got to dive after it. And so I like to scream loose or get on the floor. I think one thing that probably is really noticeable would be the fact that I'm never standing still. And then kids have done some skits in some of our, you know, our overnight travels and tournaments and the holidays and stuff like that. And, you know, they're always pacing or, you know, throwing their hands in the air or being really animated. And I think part of it is that I want to be on the floor still. I want to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And so I think those would be some of the things that would be the acreisms that we're always saying. Yeah, I think another one is probably shoot with confidence. I don't like telling kids, don't shoot that. I don't like, you know, letting that negative mindset come in. And we do our skill stuff, even our bigs. And I mean, this, again, transcends to every level of hoops is that, you know, whether you're 4'11 or you're 7 feet tall, everybody can shoot the three. Mm-hmm. And, I think that's something that we do in practice a lot is that we don't limit our guys that are big from doing perimeter skill work. And we also make our littles work on their post game. You know, a lot of times the little fellows are actually our best post players because they've had to deal with positioning and getting their hips and their shoulders by people. And they actually a lot of times can be more successful in the paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talked about, you know, playing some pressure defense and doing some different things of that. I know, you know, talking to other coaches that you play pretty frequently. They talk about your teams that do that. You guys run a variety of different defenses and pressure the ball really well. I'm curious how you go about maybe implementing that strategy and ensuring that, you know, by playing different defenses, you got to make sure your kids know what they're doing in all of the defenses you're calling. So how do you make sure that every kid knows where they're supposed to be and what the expectation is with playing a variety of different defenses?
Yeah, I think it starts with, you know, learning from my dad and that, you know, playing hoops in the PIL, you know, you have the Jeffs, the Grants, the Bensons, the Lincolns. You know, you go down the list of teams that were super successful. And at Wilson, you know, we were never the best team. You were never the most skilled, never the most athletic. But what we tried to do is we tried to mix things up. And the same thing we do at Gladstone is that on makes and misses, we're always in a different defense. And so our pregame or at timeouts or quarters, we're always switching in that we're going to run something different on makes and we're going to run something different on misses. And so, you know, and it keeps the other team, you know, kind of on their toes of like, okay, I got to think about what they're doing now. And so they're not necessarily thinking about what they want to run or what press break they're going to do or what they're going to run the half court. So I mean, that's probably the reason why we do it is to keep teams guessing. And so they're not just able to come down and do what they want. I also feel really fortunate in that, my two varsity assistants, one is more of a zone guy in the half court and one is a full court man to man, try to get inside somebody's shorts type of pressure guy. And so, the nice thing is we have three different voices that are telling kids what they're doing in practices. And so, you know, Ryan Browning, he was a holdover from the previous head coach. He was my JV coach for a couple of years, and then he decided that he wanted to be just a varsity assistant. And he's kind of our half-court zone guy. And then Rick Priester, he is an original Gladstone alumni from way back when. He's been around for a really long time. And I think it's really important for every staff to have an older, experienced, wiser guy on staff, and he's that guy. But at the same time, he still has a lot of fire, and he's always poking and prodding me, hey, full court press, full court press, full court press. And so we have kind of this unique setup between the three of us as to what we do in practices and to what our game plans are going to be. And so that's kind of the voices, I think, are huge. It's not my voice over and over and over again. It's somebody else. I think kids nowadays, they tune out coaches if they hear the same voice over and over again. And so I think that's pretty unique. And I also have to, you know, give credit to our school in that I feel like I walked into a really fortunate position in that obviously we're close to the metro area. You know, we have lots of kids that, you know, will go into Portland and play open gyms here and there. You know, it lends itself well to summer leagues and that we're able to play a lot of 5A and 6A schools. And so competition wise, we always have to, you know, play as hard as we can to try to hang. And so, you know, because of that, the teaching and practices, you know, it goes to a lot of live ball stuff in that, we don't want to spend a lot of time standing, walking through because kids get bored. You know, we want to give 2 or 3 points and let's play a couple possessions, blow it dead. I was lined up with a free throw, make or miss, here's what we're doing. And so putting in those positions of kind of game scenarios, I think has helped us. Now, like I said earlier, we're going to do a lot more teaching, you know, this next year in that, you know, we're going to go from a team that started, you know, guys that started as freshmen and sophomores for 3 or 4 years to now having a brand new set of starters. And so getting them up and running, there's going to be a lot of teaching to be able to play that we the way we want to play. I've already had lots of discussions with the coaching staff as to what direction we want to go because we're going to be little. I've been really fortunate to have either two to three bigs in all my years at Gladstone. And we're not going to have a ton of that these next couple of years. And so we're going to probably change our identity a little bit. But we're still going to still try to mix things up because we want to make sure that, you know, other teams aren't able to just focus on what they want to do, that they got to focus on what we're doing defensively, so that we can kind of create some chaos.
Yeah. Do you put all of your different defenses in the preseason, or is it something where, you know, you start with a couple, and then as the season goes on, maybe you add this defense and then another defense a couple weeks later? What does that install look like?
Yeah, it's a progression. I mean, I've always been a huge proponent of man-to-man. So when we do our shell drill stuff and we do our defensive breakdown, you know, stations, I think kids then really realize how serious it is because that's when I really turn up the intensity and turn up my energy and my focus and how loud I am and how encouraging I am. So the man-to-man stuff is our base stuff, and we try to use those principles in all of our defensive sets. I think most coaches do that as well, is that you want to have these base principles and then use those as much as you can. So early on, preseason-wise, you know, we want to be able to have our half-court man, our full-court man in. We want to try to have one full-court zone press and then one half-court zone. You know, that's kind of our starting point in the preseason. And then kind of we've done this kind of every year is that we have a couple sets that we might want to run, and we just may not ever get to them because of our personnel. Mm-hmm. Because again, you gotta coach and teach to what you have. You know, if we're gonna have a bunch of, you know, 5'6" slow white kids that that can't move their feet and can't do things, then we're not gonna get up and pressure people. But if we have a mixture of athletes and a mixture of kids that are long, we're gonna try to mix things up and pressure and use our length to our advantage. And so those are the kind of things that we talk about throughout the season. Hey, we've done this in years past. This team kind of resembles that. Can we do that? And so we kind of throw it in practice. And both Ryan and Rick will be the first to say that I'm probably the first one to try to throw it out the window, whereas they're like, hey, give it a couple more possessions. Let's see if it happens. But as you know, as a head coach, you want things to be – and I feel like perfect's the wrong word. But as close to that as possible. And, you know, if your JV team is giving it to you two, three, four, five possessions in a row, why do I want to be in that defensive set anymore?
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And so it's one of those things of, okay, let's blow it dead. Let's go, you know, shoot some free throws, get a water, and let's jump back into it after making a couple tweaks. And that's where my assistants have done a really good job of making sure that I don't just go off the deep end and throw it out the window.
Right. Good to have those guys there.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. As assistants, they're always in the easier spot. You know, as the assistant, you get to throw random ideas out there, and if it sticks, great. If it doesn't, oh well.
Yeah. Exactly. How do you go about managing player expectations of playing time and kind of getting them to buy into roles within the team?
I think that comes pretty early in the season. Over the last, actually pretty much my entirety at Gladstone, we don't have a freshman team. We have a JV2 team. And that's because of our league in that, I feel really fortunate. We're always able to have three teams. Other schools in our league, you know, it's one, sometimes two teams. Not everybody's got three. And so we kind of call our third team our JV2 team because, a handful of us will have, you know, 9, 10 freshmen, and then maybe there's a sophomore that, you know, you want to keep in the program, but you don't really have a spot for them on the JV team. So we call the JV 2 team. And every year that I've been the head coach of Gladstone, we have had at least two sophomores on JV 2. And that's kind of the first conversation that we have actually with kids or with those kids, in that, you know, you get to, as a sophomore, you know, you're probably a little more physically adept to being more successful. And so we preach them as, hey, you get to be the dude on this team. And so it's not necessarily, hey, you're getting demoted. It's an opportunity to play, because if you're on the JV team, you might be 10, 11, 12, you know, and the role of the JV coach is to get guys ready to play varsity. And if you're not playing at the JV level, you're not getting that chance to get ready to play at the varsity level. And so, you know, phrasing it in that fashion, in that it's an opportunity to play. It's an opportunity to work on things that you may not be able to work on if you're part of the team that's at the next level. But also putting the ball in their court. You know, with those kids, we always tell them, hey, this is what we want to do. You know, give them the reasons, you know, kind of give them the benefits. But also tell them, hey, I want you to think about this tonight. And first thing tomorrow morning, I want you to come in and tell me what you think. And, you know, again, knock on wood, we're 100% with kids saying, hey, I'm bought in. I want to do it. Because they've seen it in previous years. You know, when they were a freshman, they've had a couple sophomores play down with them. And those kids were the leaders and, you know, able to do some things, and they see that and say, okay, this is my opportunity. You know, at the JV level, like I said, you know, the JV coach's job is to ramp up, you know, what is taught the JV 2 or the freshman level, and get guys ready to play at the varsity level. And, you know, again, we have the philosophy, we want to get everybody in the game on the JV team. And that's for the JV 2 as well. You know, it may only be for a minute, but we want everybody on the floor. And if games are close, we try to tell kids, hey, you know, it's probably 5, 6, 7 guys that are going to play in that fourth quarter. And then at the varsity level, obviously it's different in that, you know, winning isn't everything, but at the same time, you got to produce. And, you know, we've had meetings with kids of, hey, right now we see you as 10, 11, 12. It's really cool. You're going to have a jersey. You're going to have all the gear. You're going to be able to travel with us. You get to practice every day. You get to work on your game. But understand that you may not get the opportunity to play all that much. And so those conversations up front have been huge. We also tell kids, though, if you work at it, there's nothing to say that, barring somebody getting injured or barring the fact that we just had the wrong read on you in tryouts, that you don't become a rotation guy. You know, and, you know, I think a big thing nowadays too, and I've seen it in my role as the AD, is that, you know, guys that, and gals and players that come up as juniors and seniors on varsity, they think their time is now. And, you know, they're never looking in the rearview mirror to see which freshman or sophomore might be better than them. And I think a really nice thing that I've had is that every single year we've had either a freshman or a sophomore on the varsity playing. And so guys know that, hey, I'm going to bring people up. If they're good, they're going to play. I mean, in our playoff game that we had against Marshfield in the fourth quarter, I put a kid in who's a sophomore who hadn't played a single minute of varsity because he was kicking our fannies in practice leading into that game. And I put him in for a couple minutes, and he buried a three and got a steal. And it's one of those things that you put kids in situations and you hope they're successful. It backfires every once in a while, but at the same time, they see that kids are going to get the opportunity, and we're not lying to their faces that, you know, if you work at it and you develop XYZ, there's a chance you're going to get a play. Mm-hmm. No. So, and you know, we talk about rules and that, you know, and I think, you know, you can't really BS kids anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, kids are, mm-hmm. you know, with social media and with, you know, all the travel ball that kids play and watching the different levels that, that are on TV, you know, kids know who can score, who can shoot it, as well as who can't. And so, you know, we try to tell kids that, hey, you're not necessarily a shooter, but, you know, if you're open in rhythm, want you to shoot it. But at the same time, if you can get a steal because you're pressuring in the passing lanes, go attack the rack in a fast break. You know, so try to phrase it in ways that, you know, kids still feel like they're part of the offensive end, even if they're, you know, a defensive specialist, so to say.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Aker will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, save the date. The 2021 OACA OBCA Nike Basketball Coach of the Year Clinic will be held Friday, October 8th at Liberty High School. Also, plan to join us for the second annual OBCA Golf Tournament Saturday, October 9th at the OGA Golf Course in Woodburn. You can find more information at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Cody Aker. He's the boys' basketball coach at Gladstone High School. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you against the shot clock. I know you've listened to the podcast before. Your dad was on it, so I'm sure you're familiar. We're going to do some rapid-fire questions. Should have 1 to 2 word answers. I'm going to set 35 seconds on a timer, and we're going to see how many questions you can get through in that 35 seconds.
All right.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
All righty. 35 seconds on the clock, starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
Should it be implemented at the sub-varsity levels?
No.
If you're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds, do you foul?
Yes.
How big of a lead before you pull off a press?
20.
Favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Hedge and recover.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Hoosiers.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
Hanging out in the locker room with the team and the coaches.
What's one word officials would use to describe you?
Sound like my dad.
Nice. Oh, man. I guess depending on the official, that could be a good thing or a bad thing, right, Chris?
Absolutely. There are many times that, you know, officials that have been around a while, you know, they'll be like, hey, I remember, you know, officiating you in high school or in college. And then I'll yell something, and they kind of look at me and have this look on the face of like, you, and they'll say, you just sound like your dad. So, yeah, depending on who it is, it can be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like it. That's a good one. That's a good one. So, I mean, I call it the shot clock segment because it's a fun way to get through some rapid-fire questions. But, obviously, shot clock is also a hot topic issue in our state and across the country. NFHS just came out with some hopefully promising news allowing states to decide whether or not they implement a shot clock or not. You said you were in favor of the shot clock. Can you explain why that is?
Yeah, I think it's, playing in college, obviously you have one, and so the pace of play is really nice. I know it takes away kind of advantages for teams that want to run an offense or stall in certain scenarios. But, you know, the game of basketball is supposed to be up and down. It's not supposed to be standing in the half court. And, you know, you can execute in 30 seconds or 35 seconds, however long the shot clock is. You can execute and get what you want. I just think the way that we play and the style of play, we don't hold on to the ball for 30 to 35 seconds. We're getting shots up. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it would be a big change, at least on our end. I know, like I said, other schools would have some differences in that regard. But I just think of the fact of how basketball should be played in my eyes, that we should have a shot clock that keeps the pace of play going.
You mentioned, you know, been in a gym your whole life, Coach. So what's the strangest thing you've ever seen in a basketball gym?
The strangest thing? I think probably, well, so it would have to be around the old PE equipment. Dad was a high school PE teacher before he became the athletic director. And the different PE equipment that would come out from, field hockey to archery to lawn darts to, I mean, you name it, stuff that they had in the 50s and 60s, just really odd as to why is that in the gym? Why is that not a storage? Why was that not thrown away yet?
That's good. Any of those ever come into play in practice or anything? Would you ever have to stop practice, get the lawn darts out of the way? Or
fortunately, no.
Okay,
but
good.
At Glassstone, we have full archery sets up above our gym.
Wow.
No, I'm not letting my guys up there to try it out, but it's up there.
Every time you guys hit a three, you don't have the cheerleader shoot a bow and arrow or anything like
that. That'd be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty sweet. There you go. Talk to the AD about that for next year, maybe. There you go. You know, coach, it's always a good idea to practice some special situations to get prepared for close games and in-the-game scenarios. Is there a situation that you like to work on with your guys or practice often?
We do a couple things. One, we do three-play perfection. In that, we bring a team over and we either draw something up or give them three plays. And they get, obviously they get three possessions to score and we keep track. And so, offensively you get three. And then once you flip over from offense to defense, and then another three possessions and we keep score. And with that, those three possessions, the losers usually have a set of lines. And kids are competitive and they don't want to necessarily run in condition. And so it really, whether it's they become more physical or they cut harder or they focus, we see dividends in that and that we try to execute as best we can so that we can get, out of a set, a shot that we want, in a late game or late quarter situation. The other thing we like to do is we like to put 3 minutes on the clock. And play, give a team a 4-point lead and say, whoever, loses is running again. And what we've done the last couple of years as a coach is we've kind of taken a step back. We've officiated, called fouls, administered free throws and so forth. But we've let the kids coach themselves and, we give them 30 seconds before we play. And go, all right, hey, you're down four. You need to make sure you know what defense you're in and what you're going to run this next possession you come down. The offensive team, you're up four. What are you going to run here to increase your lead or to make sure you don't have a bad turnover? So those are the things that we've done that have been pretty helpful thus far.
Yeah. How do you go about selecting your team captains or leaders in the scenarios that you were just talking about?
I'm a big proponent of the leaders and captains being our seniors. Now, it doesn't always necessarily end up being our seniors, but usually those are the kids that have been in the program for 4 years. And those are the kids that have, gone from freshman or the JV2 team to the JV team to the varsity team. They've made that progression, and they put their time in, and they know what the program is about. But at the same time, we've had years where we've had a sophomore or a junior be a captain. And we don't necessarily have a team vote. It kind of is something that kind of falls together through practices, through conversations with kids of, who do you see out here that's, doing the right things? Who do you see here that's encouraging, it's not belittling? It's not, nagging people. And so kind of those side conversations, kind of lead us down the path of who it's going to be. And ultimately I'm the one that chooses our captains. It's usually a guy that, that I feel like can have a conversation with an official, as well as a guy that, that's going to be on the floor a lot of the times during the game. And a guy that I know that can relay a message to the rest of the team as to what needs to happen.
Do you give your captains any specific duties? I mean, obviously on the court, relaying information, but is there anything they do for your team, whether it's in practice or in the hallways or anything like that?
Yeah, practice-wise, usually our captains are the ones that lead us in our warm-up and our foam rolling that we do. They're the ones that call out what we're doing and when we switch. Going to games and coming home from games, it's not necessarily our captains, but our seniors. Our seniors are responsible for making sure that the gear gets back on the bus after the game, as well as making sure that the bus is clean after the game. We obviously get to travel over to Madras, and so usually guys have snacks. We usually get pizza on the way home, and so there's a litany of things that end up being left on the bus, and I always put the seniors in charge to make sure that the bus is completely picked up before the bus driver even gets back there. In the hallways, game days, we dress up shirt and tie and our team jackets. So in the hallways, our seniors are the ones that should be looking the best, and they can help teach our younger kids, how to tie a tie or, how to tuck your shirt in and wear a belt and, pull your pants up so you're not sagging. And look the part so that you're looking professional. And so those are kind of the things that we try to make sure, not necessarily our captains, but also our seniors, know that, hey, if you see a freshman that has a tie that's, kind of untied hanging over their shoulder, or, the kid in the hallway that's acting up, you have the ability to step in and tell them what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite team bonding activity you like to do with your guys?
I think probably twofold. One is that we usually do, and a lot of times it just falls over winter break because that's when we have time. We usually do a survey, where it's a set of 10 to 15 questions that we have kids fill out individually. And then we kind of go through and read out the question and, ask kids if they want to respond, if they want to answer this question. And sometimes it's dead quiet because nobody wants to answer the question. And as coaches, we'll then, all right, so-and-so, you're answering this question, put them on the spot. And so, that's one. And then the second thing that we've done that has been a lot of fun is, and it's because of when the way our league season ends and when the playoffs start, the last several years, it's been almost 2 weeks. And we usually pull up a handful of JV kids that are going to be scout team or going to be in practice or whatever. And so now we have this whole kind of new dynamic of a varsity crew plus four or five JV guys. And we like to play kickball or wiffle ball. And we will, do 45 minutes to an hour of basketball, and then we'll play a wiffle ball game for the next half hour, 45 minutes, and send them on their way. And we'll keep score, and we'll go inning by inning, and we'll pick it up the next day because there's no reason to grind on them for a week and a half or 2 weeks before a playoff game. And so that's that's one thing that we do as well.
Mm. I like it. What's your favorite drill that you guys do?
I think we call it double snake. And it's a drill that I picked up from a guy's name is Brad Crosby. He's a current math teacher at Gladstone, but is currently a varsity assistant up at Oregon City. He was a former head coach at Gladstone. He's coached at Tigard. he got lots of knowledge. Played at Gladstone, and anyways, year one, picked this drill up from him. It's basically the coach stands at the top of the key. There's an offensive guy on each wing, and then there's two defenders. And when I have the ball top of the key, they should be in full denial. When we throw to one wing, you know, they got to jump to square the guy up. The opposite defender's got to sprint to the middle to be help side. And while all this is happening, guys are on the sideline. They need to be cheering. They need to be loud. They need to be yelling ball, 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 or help side. And so the gym gets really loud. There's lots of energy. And if everybody is busting their tail for, you know, the 10 seconds or 15 seconds that they're in the drill, we go rapid fire right through it. And kids have begun to learn that if they can go high energy, sprint, talk, that drill gets done and over with. You know, the first couple of years we did it, it was a grind. And that kids would have to stay in the drill until they got it. And it just wasn't any fun. But a couple of years ago, I had a class come through that made the drill almost too over the top and too sarcastic. But at the same time, it fed this idea that if you have high energy and you're talking and yelling and sprinting, that you get through it. And then it promotes talking, and it promotes guys being in full denial. It promotes guys squaring up when they're on ball. It promotes guys getting to the help side, which are all of our, you know, base principles when we're in half-court man.
Yeah. I like it. Even if it's sarcastic talk, it's still talk, right? Which is something
exactly, yeah.
is lacking in on the defensive end, for sure.
Yeah, we like to tell kids that, you know, as teachers in the classroom, they can't get you to stop talking.
Yeah.
Right. But as soon as you get on the court, you clam up and don't say a word.
Right. Yeah, exactly. My new one I've started telling kids is, you know, I know you're playing video games on the headset. You're screaming it at your teammates, you know, like, hey, I need help. You know, I'm getting bogged down over here. But on the court, you won't say anything. You know, I don't know. It's in it. I know it's there. I know.
Yeah,
it
should translate.
Yeah, right. Well, Coach, I think that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Derek. I appreciate you taking the time. Also want to thank you. You've done a great deal in your current position with the OBAC, and I think you've done a great job of connecting coaches through this podcast series. It's pretty awesome.
Well, thanks, Coach. I appreciate that. If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Aker, you can find his contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.